Welcome to Cybersecurity Where You Are, the Center for Internet Security's podcast. I'm Sean Atkinson, CISO at CIS.
And I'm Tony Sager, Senior Vice President and Chief Evangelist at CIS. Cybersecurity affects us all, whether we're online at home, managing a company, supporting clients, or running a state or local government.
So join us on Wednesdays as we discuss trends and threats, explore security best practices, and interview experts in the industry.
Together, we'll clarify these issues, creating confidence in the connected world.
Hello, and welcome to the show, Cybersecurity Where You Are. I'm Sean Atkinson, CISO here at the Center for Internet Security, joined by the host with the most, the Hall of Famer, the difference maker, Mr. Tony Sager. Tony, how are you, sir?
Great, thanks, Sean. Great to be back online with you.
Fantastic. We have a very special guest from Akamai, Mr. Douglas Holland. Douglas, how are you, sir?
Doing terrific today. Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
Thank you. Thank you for being here. Douglas, could we maybe just get a quick intro about you, your career, and current role at Akamai?
Sure. Yeah, I'm a solutions engineer over here at Akamai. I work on our public sector team, and I have a specific focus on our state, local, and education business. So I work with SLTTs all across the United States, have worked in government in Canada as well. So big swath of responsibilities here, from the public sector perspective at Akamai. Also been very active in the partnership that we have with Center for Internet Security, mainly surrounding our malicious domain blocking and reporting service. So folks at CIS kind of refer to me as the godfather of MDBR. I'm the technical, person in the background from an Akamai perspective on the MDBR programs.
Wonderful, wonderful. And again, with Akamai, MDBR, the service that is provided as part of our partnership, and then also sponsorship of our MSISEC annual meeting, Douglas, that Akamai also provided, which we're very thankful for, and which led us to connect and really start to think about. And Douglas, when we look at the threat landscape, and we're starting to see certain advanced persistent threats, particularly typhoon types, as it were, what are we starting to see and how are we defining the types of APTs that are in the typhoon area, as it were?
Yeah, and it's really timely discussion because, people get kind of focused, and rightly so. Everybody's kind of thinking about ransomware primarily when we think about, the threats that are happening today. And it's well-founded. I mean, ransomware is one of those things that's just not going away. But these typhoon-type attacks can be even more catastrophic, have bigger consequences even than ransomware. So when we think about typhoon attacks, typhoon is kind of a name that was generated by Microsoft. They said, hey, we're going to start doing a weather-based naming scheme for these things that are happening. So a few years ago, they said, all right, these are the typhoon style of attacks. And these are primarily coming from the People's Republic of China. So these are Chinese nation state actors. So you're thinking about folks from China, and they're often going to have these geopolitical objectives. And so instead of coming in, with like a ransomware attack and kind of the smash and grab style thing, they're kind of doing what we call a living off the land. And basically what they're doing is coming in, trying to establish persistence and really go unnoticed. So they're going to, instead of dropping a bunch of noisy malware and making a big ruckus, they're going to come in and use tools that you're already using, things like PowerShell, VPN, any of your, kind of Windows tools or Linux tools that look like normal traffic. So when you were, kind of looking at things that are happening in your environment, you're not seeing anything that really stands out as, something that's just not ordinary. They're really focusing, really strong focus on things like critical infrastructure. So your telecom, cloud, and managed service providers. Kind of gives them the ability to attack multiple organizations at once. So if you can kind of look at the downstream targets, they're going to be kind of upstream in that critical infrastructure. So, and really it's all about having strategic access. So they're looking at things like power, your water systems, transportation, any of these government kind of systems, and they're kind of sitting there laying in wait. Now, if some kind of conflict arises, there's some kind of, thing that they want to take advantage of, they already have have that foothold. They're ready to strike when the timing is right for them.
Absolutely. Now, when we think of Typhoon, one that comes to mind, Douglas, is Vault Typhoon. And you mentioned living off the land, and some of their capabilities seem to have evolved. Let's say the tactics, techniques, and procedures have evolved over time, specifically within the last 5 years. And from an Akamai perspective and what you're, you know, tracking in terms of both the threat intelligence, the detections, and both the activity, what are you starting to see? Is it an AI-enabled capability? Is it, no, they're just responding to, you know, we create the mousetrap, they just bypass it, so we have to create the new mousetrap. What are you starting to see in terms of the evolution of TTPs from the Typhoon type APTs?
Yeah, you know, think about, you know, maybe even as early as 5 years ago, you're going to see a lot of, you know, kind of malware and exploitation kind of kits, a lot of that noisy kind of stuff, where today they're really have shifted more to leaning on, like I was talking about before, the built-in tools. So they're trying to blend in. They're about trying to get valid credentials. So they're doing privilege escalations, making sure they have credentials that they need to do the things that they need to do. So they're really trying to blend in and avoid things. So you've got, you know, your antivirus systems, your EDRs, all these kind of things. They're trying to, you know, not trigger those, you know, kind of systems, not really give folks clues that they're in the infrastructure. They're really starting to take advantage of the cloud as well. So if you can infiltrate or kind of compromise a cloud control plane. So think of your, you know, Azure control plane or AWS, Google, you know, or things like that, or even some of your you know, software as a service applications. If you can compromise those control planes or the APIs, you can actually kind of start moving laterally then without even getting in and touching endpoints. So instead of going in and trying to compromise, maybe do a phishing attack, get control of an endpoint and start moving laterally that way, they're doing it more from a control plane kind of perspective. They're also looking at your identity providers, you know, things like single sign-on. If I can get, you know, a compromise of your single sign-on, hey, if I can sign in once and now have access to everything, good outcome for them. So they're going to be doing those kinds of things. And then also looking at the supply chain itself. So looking at managed service providers or any of these, you know, kind of upstream organizations. If I can, you know, kick out, you know, one of your service providers, a web host, one of your vendors. Unfortunately, you know, some vendors have been attacked this year, and it's kind of given us some consternation, you know, when we think of those kind of things happening. But if, you know, if any of those kind of things can happen, now you've got access into multiple organizations. You can get into different cities, different counties, different whatever the case may be, if I can, you know, kind of attack from upstream and then kind of use that access to get into things in the lower level.
Yeah, I mean, Douglas, this is a, you know, the level of professionalism, right, one expects from a nation state. This yeah, comprehensiveness, right? This is not a strike. This is a campaign of activity here.
Yeah, this isn't somebody sitting in their mom's basement, you know, screw kitty, just running stuff. Although, you know, now that's with AI, you brought up AI before, with all of the things that AI brings to the table, you know, it's really arming a lot of those less sophisticated actors that have an agenda. So those things can happen, but, you know, it's just in a different level when we're talking about nation state attackers.
No, absolutely. And, you know, even the amateurs, right, have access to sort of this professional level of reconnaissance and, you know, life cycle attacks and all that. But you know, you have such a unique experience, both the sort of technology work you do, but also insight into state, local, tribal, territorial governments. Is there anything unique about that community, either in terms of adversary behavior or in terms of their defensive vulnerability that strikes you as important to know?
It is actually, and when we start talking about public sector organizations and the SLTT community in general, or, you know, or more specifically when we're talking about public sector, we have a group of organizations that typically has a lot more restrictions when it comes to resources. So I've been working in public sector for over 8 years now. I haven't had a conversation with an SLTT yet that says, you know, hey, you know what, Douglas, we've got all the money we need to fund all of our projects. We've got plenty of folks that are you know, technically capable and can, you know, implement these projects and manage them going forward, all these different kind of things. So that the exact opposite, of course.
That's a way of life.
You know, we've got folks that we can't hire and retain, you know, good, strong, you know, technical folks in the public sector. You really need to, you know, find somebody that's, you know, their why is public sector, and you know, then you can, you know, have a fighting chance. But a lot of times, you know, folks are going to have a hard time paying the salaries and you know, getting those folks that have that strong technical expertise. If you hire, you know, kind of green folks or, you know, new to the industry folks, get them trained up. As soon as they get that experience and that knowledge, then they can start jumping ship and go try to make the money, you know, in the private sector. So there's the personnel and the, you know, the budgeting. So folks are limiting or have limited budgets and really struggling to, you know, just kind of do what they can with the resources that they have. Now, that said, I've learned over my years that the folks working in the public sector are some of the most resourceful people you'll ever meet in your life. I mean, I've seen, you know, cases where small organizations that, you know, basically are on a shoestring budget are just coming up with the most creative and innovative solutions to keep their organization protected and really reducing that risk as best as they can. So I give everybody in the SLTT community just tremendous kudos because they really can make a lot out of nothing. You know, think of, you know, maybe over, we just had Thanksgiving holiday, right? And a lot of folks, you know, maybe in the way things are these days, had to make a lot out of a little. That's kind of an analogy of how the public sector can work when it comes to trying to fight these kind of advanced persistent threats that we're talking about today.
Absolutely. We're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, we're going to talk about visibility across multiple layers of defense. We're going to look at lessons learned from recent threats. And me as a CISO, I'm going to ask for some advice as I try to defend and help SLTTs in this space. So we'll be right back. Up until recently, threat activity fell into one of three domains: cyber, physical, or information operations.
This made it simpler for defenders to learn about a threat actor, track its evolution, and put protective measures in place.
Unfortunately, it's no longer that simple. Threats are now multidimensional, blending these three domains together.
You can't analyze threats in silos any longer, and a pair of 3D glasses won't help you expose them. You need to see the entire threat environment. You need ThreatWire.
Unlike separate raw data feeds, ThreatWire provides warning and analysis of multidimensional threats all in one place. That means time and money back to make better risk decisions.
ThreatWire isn't just a subscription. It's an exclusive intelligence sharing network that uses its expertise to help you defend against today's multidimensional threats.
Actionable intelligence in a complex world. ThreatWire's got your back.
Learn more by visiting cisecurity.org/threatwire.
Okay, so we're back. So Douglas, as we're thinking about this problem, and I see it from multiple levels as well. I see the new normal work from home hybrid type of approach and movement to the cloud opening up, let's say, an attack surface, making that more diversified, increasing the number of opportunities in that space. So I think the layers of defensive capability or control is kind of multiplying with this new normal. I say new, but we've been living it for a few years now. But in those cases, where is Akamai and where do you see either advancement in capabilities that are needed, and where do we then sit across from SLTTs and provide the guidance in terms of products and services that will allow them to both increase the defense, but I think also, I'll put it this way, that the awareness, as it were, that these are gaps that need to be filled. These are potential threats. So what do you think about that?
Yeah, a lot to unpack there, right? Yeah. It's a big, you know, kind of a big kind of subject to tackle there. And what we've seen, you know, and especially in the last few years, you know, when, you know, we've kind of taken the normal environment that we had where, you know, kind of everybody's in one location and now all of the apps and all the people have left the building, you know, it's really created what you might call a big credential playground for these, you know, typhoon type actors. So we've got all these different networks now, right? Because we had, you know, we used to need to concentrate on the private network in our business. All of our users were there, all of our servers and applications, everything was there in one environment. And it kind of, you know, made it an easier, you know, kind of fortress to defend. Now we've got folks logging in from home networks. They're working from home. They could be working from any, you know, internet connection. You've got all sorts of different devices. You know, you might have managed devices, but you're going to have a lot of, you know, personal devices, unmanaged devices as well, unmanaged Wi-Fi, the move to the cloud. You got all these software as a service kind of applications. You know, so that's an expanded attack surface that is really, you know, making it, you know, easier for the attackers to take advantage of that, because all it takes is, you know, one single misconfigured, you know, maybe a cloud storage, you know, maybe you got an S3 bucket that's misconfigured. Maybe you've got a role that's misconfigured in a SaaS app, some kind of management interface that's just not tightened down enough. Now that attacker can take advantage of that. And once they've got that entry point in, they can start, you know, kind of expanding their footprint and getting into things. So really, really tough to do. So the way you combat all that stuff is to really increase your visibility into, you know, what is going on in your network. And that can be really, really hard to do. Now, what we recommend at Akamai is, you know, kind of a software-based approach where, you know, we can do this with kind of a host-based firewall solution that gives you visibility into what I like to call who's talking to who and what they're talking about. That means we can see this, system is talking to this system. They're using these ports, but these are the processes that are running. So we can see rich layer 7 contextual information about the communications that are happening in our environment. That visibility is going to give us, you know, kind of a good start, because we can see what's normal. Then when things are anomalous and we can start seeing things that just aren't quite right, kind of sticks out like a sore thumb when you get that, you know, kind of baseline of visibility, lets you detect those anomalies much, much easier.
Definitely. And I think, Tony, that opens up, you know, opportunity where we see good control implementation strategy, an alignment to a technology that not only can identify, but bring visibility back to defenders in the space and do it in such a way that allows us to continuously improve. Because one of the things that I've seen, I don't know if you've seen this, Douglas, is there are elements of implementation of defense that solve an immediate problem, but don't necessarily allow you to continually improve. It kind of solves the need for the immediate requirement, but not allowing you to really expand and ingest, as it were, kind of threat intelligence, the lessons learned, and start to then promote that through either rule-based, heuristic, or a behavioral type of approach. And what I see with Akamai is being able to provide that, and it becomes more proactive in that space. So it's not that I just solve the immediate problem, but I'm now starting to build capability for sufficiency in the future for any type of variation that a typhoon type APT would apply in, you know, respectfully, the space. What do you think, Tony?
Well, to Douglas's point, which is an important one, you know, when I first, Douglas, for context, I grew up, my first career was at the National Security Agency, working in cyber defense. And so I got to watch nation state adversaries, right, who happened to work for the U.S. government in action every day. And when I first started speaking in public in 2001 or so, the first question I would get was, what should be my first step in defense? And you could tell I spent my life as a cloistered, you know, protected government guy. Except, what a question was that? And I thought, oh, that's a real life question, right? What do I invest in first? And what popped out of my mouth was visibility. knowing how nation state attackers work, right? It was the lack of visibility on defense that empowered that to happen. And so all those things that you described are an essential part of defense because the attacker has a risk model too. They don't like to be seen. They don't want to spend more than they have to. They have to build a complex paths in that are interruptible if you understand enough and you can sense the changes that they have to make, right? That nothing happens for free, even for the bad guys. And so being able to see that visibility, but no, your point, which Sean amplified, you want to get above the level of the technical noise. You know, the technical visibility is an essential underpinning, but to connect that with events, with, you know, threats, with sort of known larger geopolitical things that are happening or economic things or influence kinds of things is a higher order of analysis. So you really want the technical stuff to be kind of generated for you, right? Right now, a lot of defenders are kind of stuck in the technical noise of moving data around and correlating and stuff. But, you know, your notion of visibility, I think, is the right one, which is this, you're connecting these things together, right? They're visible to you. And, you know, we want humans to be spending their time in human-worthy activity, right? Which is this more intelligent correlation and connecting things. So I think that is right. It also speaks to, you know, having a good foundation, a technical foundation, high levels of automation, you know, things that are brought together. And then, you know, to Sean's point, at the end, you're connecting this to action, right? Visibility is just the first step. And so it doesn't allow you then to take it isn't connected to this, to the step of action, to block something, remove something, continue, you know, add more monitoring to something, et cetera, then it's just technology and it's not really a solution. So I like where you're going on that. And I think, again, we have to have the technical underpinnings of visibility, but this sort of more intelligent connecting, I think, is really important. I think somewhere in there, by the way, Sean's still looking for some free advice from you on how to
do. That's the next question.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. And by the way, I've never heard Sean say he has enough resources either. So even at a security company, there's all the prioritizing going on.
Yeah, right, and I think that's kind of expanding, you know, across, you know, outside of public sector. I think, these resource constraints are, you know, finding their way into the public sector just as much as a private sector.
No question. And by the way, thanks for your shout out, you know, having spent my first career in public service. You're exactly right. And that's our experience in dealing with state and locals. I mean, every once in a while, someone I talk to, you're doing what with what? You know, with what would have been pennies in the federal government. Now, people would whine when they didn't get a multimillion dollar, you know, budget item that they wanted. And I look at states doing amazing things with $10,000 or, you know, really just very minimal resources and with a very inexperienced and often transient workforce, right? A couple of the things that you mentioned, which means, you know, how are you going to build the continuity to put together a security program, which is not a 6-month activity, but a multi-year, you know, funded, you know, executive sponsored activity. You've got to have really kind of a constant vision and the resources in place to do that.
Agreed. Okay. So now it's advice corner, Tony.
Here we go. you have Sean's attention now.
So, Douglas, when we sit with CISOs such as myself, security teams, and we're thinking about this defender's dilemma that we talked about, you know, that one misconfiguration is, and again, I know it's that we have to be right all the time and, you know, the attacker has to be right once. But I give a little bit more credit to the fact that getting right once requires a lot of skill and capability. And when we look at advanced persistent threats, they're evolving their techniques. They're evolving their capabilities. So when I'm thinking, okay, I want to mitigate those types of risks by being proactive, but I also have to be reactive to what's currently happening in the environment, the resources I have available, things of that nature. Where do you start? What type of advice do you provide from, you know, engineering solutions in that space to reduce the exposure to evolving threats? And I get that, you know, in some cases, I need the context of your organization. I need to understand your security posture. I need to know what's in play. But as you start to look at solutioning capability, what are some of the questions you ask and what are some of the things you look at to see, all right, you've got some maturation in this space, but here's a gap. Or there's no maturation, but we're going to have to start from a lower level and build up capability. What does that look like in your world?
Yeah, and you know, you can kind of, you know, at the core of what you're doing, yeah, each organization, the conversation is going to be a little bit different. You know, people have different maturation levels and that kind of thing. But you know, when we're start having these conversations, it really can start with a common set of things that you want to have awareness of. And the first, I think, is think of identity and access being that new perimeter. So instead of having firewalls and routers and things of that thing being your kind of perimeter, the notion of a perimeter is now kind of largely on its head, because you've got your on-prem stuff, and then you've got cloud services and SaaS environments and all these kind of things. So there really isn't kind of a nicely defined perimeter. So if we can think of identity and access being this new concept of a perimeter, that's where you want to kind of focus to begin with. And so you're going to look at things like strong MFA, so things that are phishing resistant kinds of MFA, conditional access, privileged accounts, making sure you've got good governance around your privileged accounts, and then even looking at the devices itself. So doing device posture, device health checks, those kind of things are good. From there, you want to be looking at your cloud and software as a service kind of posture. So security posture around there. So we talked about, you know, all we need is one little misconfiguration. So being able to do posture management on your cloud and your SaaS apps, being able to making sure that your configurations are set up for best practices, and that we're logging and monitoring all of those different environments, all those kind of things, really, really, really important. The one thing that is getting to be table stakes now is doing segmentation. A better way of doing it is micro segmentation. So when we think of segmentation, micro segmentation, what's the difference? Segmentation, an old way that we used to segment networks and still in use, primarily today, is doing it from a network perspective. So layer two, layer three kind of segmentations. I've got VLANs, or I've got routed segments. Really, really good step up from the total flat networks that we used to have, but you've still got, kind of segments of devices. And if I can, expose one of those segments as an attacker, now I can get into everything in that segment. And if I'm really good at what I'm doing, I can, and I've talked to customers recently where they've had this problem where somebody got into one of their VLANs, was able to escalate privilege, and now navigate to different VLANs. So the old way of doing it wasn't as rock solid as we would like to think it is. Now, when we contrast that with micro-segmentation is bringing that control point right down to the workload itself. So that's a server, it's an endpoint, whatever the case may be. But bringing that perimeter down, the security perimeter, right to the device level. Now, when you get a breach that happens, I get user that's phished, I get a web server that's compromised, I can control that blast radius to just that system. So now I don't have a widespread kind of issue. I've got just one system that I've got to deal with, but I'm not dealing with a full-blown ransomware attack, or I don't have an adversary, just kind of going around unchecked through our environment. So micro-segmentation is really becoming table stakes. And when you're thinking about trying to detect and protect yourself from these typhoon type actors, micro segmentation is really going to be the best tool, because you're going to have tight controls over the communication paths in your network. And whenever you start seeing things that are not what you expect, that those kind of movements are going to stick out like a sore thumb, and you're going to really be able to see those much, much easier.
Absolutely. Now, as we start to wrap up the episode, I mean, we've flown through it at a phenomenal pace. I really appreciate it, Douglas. This is fantastic. But I want to think about another piece of advice that we'd give to organizations that are facing these threats from the SLTT perspective. When we're looking at low resources, small table stakes in terms of the underlying budget, but high in terms of one, the responsibility, and two, as it affects really national infrastructure and national security. What are you looking at and what type of advice are you starting to give SLTTs in today's world with these types of table stakes? How are we maximizing their resources and their ability to protect against these types of threats?
Yeah, it's a fantastic question. And so so the one piece of advice that I give, organizations that, want to be better prepared and better protected against these kind of things, really, I would start by assuming that an attacker is already in or they're going to be in, so take your zero trust principles, assume a breach is going to happen. And you can even take it a step farther in today's environment and just assume that somebody's already there. So what you really want to do then is try to design your environment so that a single compromised identity or a single compromised system isn't going to take down your whole mission, right? So we can kind of contain that blast radius like I was talking about. So you really want to take that mindset, do a shift. So we used to be really concentrating on keeping them out. We want to keep the attacker out. It's getting harder and harder to do, and it's really not feasible to think that you can do that. So you want to switch your thinking now to limit what they can do and be able to spot them quickly. So being able to see, okay, all right, we got something that's compromised now. They're trying to do this. Now what can we do about it and have a plan in place? So we really want to, once again, prioritize your identity, make sure you've got good identity security, least privileged access, all that kind of thing. Get that end-to-end visibility, who's talking to who, what they're talking about, all that kind of thing. And then put segmentation in place. Segment, ideally most of your systems, but you really want to think of that crown jewels or the critical stuff and start with that. So if you've got things like, well, we're talking about SLTT community, most of our SLTTs are going to have CGIS requirements. Start with the CGIS data, start with the PCI data, start with the HIPAA data, start with that mission critical stuff, the constituent data, things that are, if that stuff gets compromised, it's a really, really bad outcome. Protect that first, then start, moving down to the rest of the things. So would start with that stuff. So if you can get those fundamentals right, the typhoon type actors, they just have to work a lot harder. It's going to make them noisier and it's going to expose more of what they're trying to do. And I think that's what you really want to do is make the environment noisy for them. They're trying to be in there, be quiet, be stealth, be just kind of positioned there. If you can make them noisy, you can find them. So that would be the goal of what you want to try to do.
Fantastic. Wonderful. It's again, Douglas, I really appreciate your time, your thought leadership here, Akamai's support and partnership in the space, making a lot of difference in the SLTT community from our perspective, and obviously what Akamai does for the entire cybersecurity landscape, really. So I really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
All right, so welcome. I appreciate the opportunity to be with you all today, and truly appreciate the partnership we have with CIS. It's kind of the best part of my day.
Wonderful. That's awesome. Thank you, Douglas. And Tony, thank you, sir.
My pleasure, as always. A great topic and a great insight from Douglas. I appreciate it.
Wonderful. And thank you to our audience. Make sure to subscribe in all the usual ways with your preferred podcast provider. Catch us on YouTube at The CI Security. Make sure to subscribe and like for episodes like this and much, much more. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you for listening to the podcast today.
The thoughts and opinions expressed by our podcast guests are solely theirs and do not necessarily reflect those of CIS.
Tune in on Wednesdays for a new episode. And in the meantime, visit our website at cisecurity.org.
Together, we'll continue our efforts of creating confidence in the connected world.